Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining me here today. I hope everyone is enjoying getting ready for the holidays and they're not feeling too stressed. This is that time of year you're supposed to enjoy yourself, so make sure you take some time and keep the meaning of the season in perspective. I'm Mandy Rosniak of Interwinning Coaching, and I'm here on the Life Coach Radio Network the first and third Friday of each month at noon, and I'll be talking about everything beyond the skills and drills of sports. We look at topics and issues that make up the person, not the player. I like to have information and content that anyone can learn from. So I'm glad to have you join me here today, and I would encourage you to call in with any thoughts, questions, or comments. And the number to do that is 646-716-9397. Again, that's 646-716-9397. And to let you know a little bit more about me, I'm a life coach that focuses on peak performance, leadership, and transition coaching. I work with athletes, coaches, and motivated individuals to help them maximize their potential by reducing those pressures they face and develop that confidence that everyone wants. We try to make sure you consistently perform at your best so you can also boldly face any life transitions that are out there before you. So our work together will ignite your inner greatness so you can live and play fearless, focused, and free. And after today's show, if you'd like to contact me, I can be found at my website, which is coachmandy.com. My email is mandy@coachmandy.com. And I'm also on Facebook at Interwinning Coaching and on Twitter at Life Coach Mandy. So again, just want to remind our listeners, if you'd like to call in to ask a question, make a comment, the number is 646-716-9397. So today I'm very happy to have joining me Shannon Dopking. Tell you a little bit about Shannon. She is a softball player, former softball player. She's now a coach. But Shannon enters her first season as head coach of the Amherst College softball program. Prior to that, though, Shannon was a four-year standout catcher at the Division I powerhouse University of Tennessee. She previously also served as an assistant at Division I Stony Brook and Fairleigh Dickinson after enjoying a five-year professional career in the National Pro Fast Pitch League. Shannon was an accomplished player enjoying a decorated four-year career at the Southeastern Conference powerhouse, Tennessee. She helped the Lady Vols to an impressive 246-46 record, which is an 842 winning record. And she was there from 2005 to 2008. She played in three consecutive Women's College World Series from 2005 through 2007. She was named to the freshman All-SEC team. In 2005, she was a first-team All-League selection as a junior while also earning All-South Region accolades. She graduated with a degree in sociology, and then she continued her playing career after graduation as the 15th overall pick in the 2008 National Pro Fast Pitch Draft by the Akron Racers. Enjoying stints with the USSSA Pride and the Tennessee Diamonds, she signed with the Chicago Bandits prior to the 2011 season, and she was the catcher for Monica Abbott's perfect game on August 4, 2011. She also helped Chicago capture its second National Pro Fast Pitch Championship later that year. And then through all this, she earned her master's degree of sports administration from Fairleigh Dickinson. And she then, probably because she was so busy, announced her retirement from the Professional Softball League after five seasons on February 4th of 2013. So just last year, she guessed it was probably time to focus on next part of her life. So I'm very happy to welcome in Shannon. And Shannon, how are you today?
I'm doing well.
So what is it like? I'm gonna throw you off right here in the beginning. What's it like when you hear someone read all that about you?
It makes me seem a lot cooler than I really am. I mean, I'm just an average girl, you know, who has a great opportunity to play, you know, softball at a high level, and you know, it was a great experience for sure.
Well, you know, tell us a little bit more about yourself, you know, aside from your bio, you know, where you're originally from, you know, when did you start playing softball, and you know, and how did you decide to become a catcher?
I'm originally from California. I grew up in a very, very small country town in California, so small that there was no stoplights in our town. I started playing softball probably around age 13. I played baseball first because the town I was in is so small that they didn't actually have softball. So I played baseball a little bit. I actually grew up doing rodeos. I barrel raced for the majority of, you know, my life, and then there came a point when I decided around like 13, 14 that, you know, I really enjoyed softball, and if I wanted to get into travel ball, I had to kind of give up that area that I enjoyed and, you know, start getting a little bit more serious with softball. I played shortstop in Little League and on one of my travel ball teams, and catching I kind of just got put back there because I can do it. And I always wanted to play shortstop, but, you know, as I got older, I kind of realized I wasn't the fastest player on the team or the quickest player. So, you know, catcher kind of fit me a little bit better, and I kind of, you know, it kind of just got thrown on my plate, and I could actually, you know, I was okay at playing that position. So it wasn't something that I, you know, wanted to do. It kind of just happened.
Well, you've obviously done pretty well for yourself in doing that. And hearing that you did rodeos, I mean, being a catcher must have been easy after that, I would think.
It was. I mean, it's kind of one of those curveballs nobody really expects from a kid from California to say that she did rodeo before she played softball. But, you know, it was definitely different, but something I really enjoyed.
Well, that's really interesting because that's, you know, as you said, that's something I did not know about you, and I'm sure quite a few people maybe don't, but that's pretty cool.
It was kind of funny at one of the World Series, you know, they make you do your fun filled fact about yourself, and 1 year that was my fact, you know, that I used to barrel race, and when I came home, so many people were like, what is barrel racing? Like, they literally thought I got in a barrel and, like, rolled myself down a hill or something, and they didn't realize it was actually on a horse, so. It's kind of funny.
That is. That's pretty cool. And I think those are the things that a lot of times people don't realize, you know, goes on in our lives before we, you know, before we get into some of the other things we do. So that's pretty cool. You know, and you also said that you started at age 13, which nowadays is kind of way outside the norm. I mean, we know, you know, in doing this that kids are starting, you know, we know kids start T-ball now at 5 and 6 years old and things like that, and there's travel ball teams that are, you know, 10 and under, 12 and under programs. So obviously in starting at age 13, you were a little bit older, obviously had, you know, athleticism in you being able to do the rodeos and things. But when did you realize or know that your softball skills were going to, like, allow you to play Division I softball? Or was that even sort of something that you even had, you know, had in your mind? Or was that even, like, a goal for you?
I definitely say, like, it was a goal for me. I think that when I looked at playing softball, you know, my parents spent tons and tons of money for me to be able to play and put me on a travel ball team and, you know, drive to Orange County every weekend, which was, you know, hour and a half, 2 hour drive, you know. They invested just a ton of money into me and playing softball because I enjoyed doing that. So for me, it was more, you know, I wanted to give back to my parents, you know, and getting a scholarship would help my parents financially, not have to, you know, pay for my education. So I think it was kind of a little bit of give and take for me personally. I didn't know. I don't think I ever knew, you know, I could play at, you know, at Tennessee. I don't think I ever looked at myself and said I'm going to play, you know, at a very great softball school. I think I played the game because I loved to play it, and, you know, I was fortunate enough to have the opportunity that I was, but I don't think at any point I said, you know, I'm going to go to Tennessee and I'm going to get a scholarship and I'm going to play softball. I think everything kind of fell into place for me.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And just to let some of our listeners know who maybe aren't big into softball and don't follow the softball world, in softball and a lot of sports nowadays, we talk about travel teams and things. You know, it's sports have gone outside of the traditional seasons with the high school teams and things like that. So nowadays, it's become almost a criteria that if you want to play at the next level, you do these travel ball teams, and they play in the summer, they play in the fall, and now it's pretty much become a year-round thing. So when Shannon mentions the travel ball team that she talked about, that's what she's getting at. And, you know, traveling that hour and a half just one way you know, shows that kind of commitment that you have to have, which obviously was another contributes, I'm sure, to a lot of your success. And so you were saying, you know, you loved it and you played for the love of the game, yet you also, you know, in the back of your mind kind of knew that, well, my parents are putting in a lot for me here, so if there was any way I could earn a scholarship, obviously that would be a, you know, a benefit. So how did you end up, you know, a California girl who did rodeo stuff, so now, you know, the Tennessee connection maybe is not so far, but how did you then end up at Tennessee, and you know, when did that process get started, and like I said, so how did you end up at the University of Tennessee?
You know, it's funny. I would say growing up, I was never a big softball fan. I never watched College World Series. I never really followed softball, to be honest. So I was kind of a different kid, you know, where I didn't look at Tennessee and say, like, I really want to go there and play softball, or, you know, look at UCLA and say, I really want to go there and play softball. So for me, you know, when the recruiting process started, I went on my visits to the University of Illinois, the University of Tennessee. I went on unofficial to UCLA, and I went on an official visit to Colgate. So kind of all over the map, and it wasn't necessarily I knew where I wanted to go. These schools wanted me, and so, you know, I went on my visits, and Tennessee kind of just sold me on everything. You know, it was kind of my mom went with me on my visit, and, you know, they were great with my mother, and my mom is, you know, my best friend, so her opinion meant a lot to me, so I didn't know I wanted to go to Tennessee. When I went on my visit, I kind of just fell in love with the school and the atmosphere. And, you know, I never grew up wanting to go to a certain particular school. You know, I went with an open mind. I went to Colgate. And, you know, I just liked Tennessee when I went on the campus. So it was never, you know, something that was planned. It kind of just happened.
Well, it's interesting too, because before we the show started, we were talking just a little bit, and you had mentioned that your parents actually have decided to retire down in Tennessee. So obviously, in a lot of ways, it was a good fit for everyone.
Yeah, I mean, I joke with my parents all the time. I mean, I knew when I was making my decision that I wanted to get out of Tennessee, or I wanted to get out of California. And like I said earlier, me and my mother are very close, and I knew that if I stayed in California to go to college, that I would be back home every weekend, and, you know, my mom would still be doing my laundry. And for me, I wanted to grow up. You know, I wanted that independence, and I knew I needed it. And in order to get it, I knew I had to get out of California. So I joke with my parents now, you know, I go all the way across the United States to Tennessee, and look at them now, they come and follow me. So they're there now, but it's great to be able to go back to Tennessee, you know, for Christmas and, you know, go back to the school and, you know, see my coaches and stuff. So it's awesome.
Well, and that's a great awareness to have as a young, you know, a young person. And now that you're, you know, doing coaching and things, we'll get into this a little bit more later, but now that you're doing coaching and you're recruiting kids and you've been doing that, I'm sure you've come across many times, you know, it's a big decision. So that's, you know, that was a big decision for you to make at such a young age, and, you know, and a lot of awareness that you seem to have around it. And so in that, it's, you know, it sounds as if, you know, you're the kind of person that you put a lot of thought into what you do and things like that. So what would you attribute to your success as a player?
I would say, I think by nature, I'm just very competitive, you know, and I think I'm very, I can look at the big picture, and I think that's helped me along the way. And, you know, understanding college sports are a revolving door, and every year new players are coming in, and it really kind of is a business, especially at a high Division I level. And when you understand that, you know, you don't look at freshmen coming in who are playing your position as, you know, they're going to take my position. The way I always kind of looked at it was I knew it was going to happen, and I had one of two choices. I could either sit and watch it happen, or, you know, I could do something about it, you know. And so it was always on my plate, you know, what I wanted to do. You know, if I wanted to keep my position and I wanted to continue to play, you know, I needed to work hard, you know. And so I think that was very helpful for me. Being successful and keeping my position was just being the competitive person I was, and I knew it was always in my hands. You know, I could either let it happen or I could do something, and I always chose to do something, so.
You know, and you know, it's funny you talk about that because everything I hear you saying is, you know, it's all about work ethic. You obviously had a strong work ethic, and you know, I'm sure a lot of that, you know, comes from your background and your parents and things like that. And you know, nowadays it seems like there's players can at times come across as having feeling a little bit of entitlement, a little bit of, you know, well, I'm here, I'm supposed to play. Because you said something about how you realized that every year there's new players coming in, new players coming in. What was it that you maybe that you got that at an early age? Because it seems like nowadays, like I said, sometimes it takes kids a little bit longer to realize that, to learn that piece, that they have to constantly be working for it, no matter what level they've reached, that they've got to keep working. Like, what was it that you maybe you can again attribute to having that work ethic and that you were able to get that? Maybe besides your competitiveness, was there anything maybe that instilled in you that sort of brought that out, or that you were able to learn that at such an early age?
I mean, I think the biggest part was I grew up with four brothers, and so nothing was ever handed to me. You know, it was always, you know, you worked for what you got, and that's kind of just the way I was brought up. And, you know, growing up with four brothers, you know, if you want something, you know, you kind of got to go get it. And that's kind of, you know, how I live my life now and how I lived my life back then, and, you know, it's just, you know, if I want something, I got to figure out what I got to do to get there, you know, and then actually do it, you know. So I've kind of formed, you know, in softball and anything, you know, formed a plan of, you know, if I want to play, you know, this is what I'm doing wrong in my swing, so that's what I got to fix. You know, if I want to be a head coach, you know, I got to get experience to be able to get into position to be able to be a head coach. So I don't know. I think it was just, you know, growing up with four brothers and, you know, always being pushed and always, you know, it's kind of just something that from a young age is just what I know.
Well, absolutely. As soon as you said you grew up with four brothers, it was kind of like, okay, yep, there's the answer, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Probably a lot of it was survival, right?
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely.
So in talking about, you know, again, what was it like playing at Tennessee and then also that experience of playing in three College World Series, especially since you had said you didn't really grow up watching them, you know, but still there's so many people out there that just would love that opportunity. And, you know, maybe you can share a little bit with us, like I said, what it was like to play at Tennessee, a high-level Division I and also in three College World Series.
I mean, it's amazing. I mean, to go to a College World Series is, I mean, every girl kind of dreams of that experience. So It was definitely one of those experiences that I wouldn't trade for anything. Especially, I would say, like, one of the most memorable moments for me as an athlete was my freshman year when we made it to the World Series for the first time. Being able to walk onto the field in Oklahoma City as a team, it was very powerful, and it was very one of those moments where the field's so big and the stands are so big, and you know, as a team, we're experiencing it together for the first time, and we're all kind of in awe. And so it was, you know, it's everything it's cracked up to be. It really is. I mean, it's just a really, really cool experience. And I think it's a cool experience on a lot of different levels, especially as, you know, a girl in sports to play on that kind of stage. I mean, it's just an awesome opportunity. And I would say playing at Tennessee, you know, it was hard. You know, it's not, I think a lot of people look from the outside in and think, like, you know, Tennessee, it's huge, it's great softball, you're given so many things, and you are, you know, you are. You're treated, you know, people know who you are on a campus like that. You know, people know who the athletes are. You can go into a grocery store and people are going to know you. But at the same time, you know, it's very difficult, you know, in the workouts that you do and the conditioning in your day-to-day life. And, you know, your schedule goes from 6 a.m. to, you know, 9 p.m. nonstop. And, you know, it's go, go, go. So I think it's give and take. You know, you work your butt off and it's difficult and it's hard. And, you know, it's you get pushed to a limit that you never thought you can go to physically, mentally, emotionally. But the reward at the end, you know, making it to the World Series, you look back and it was all worth it. All that hard work and everything you went through was worth it because, you know, we got to where we wanted to go.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you talk about the, when you just mentioned that it's a lot of hard work, but then there's also the rewards and the realization that the two go hand in hand, that one is not going to happen without the other. You know, and it's funny because in such a small world, I don't mean to bring this up, but it's, I think, kind of a funny little story. But I was actually out at the College World Series the year you guys played Arizona. And I think you recall there was a particular play at the plate where the girl who made the slide made probably, I still to this day think, was probably the best slide I've ever seen in my life. And they happened to catch an angle of that in a picture. And when I was coaching at Central Connecticut, I had actually used that picture. This is before I had met you. I had used that picture as an example with my players, because the point I was making with my players was the girl who made that slide was actually, I think that was like only like the second or third game. She hadn't played quite a bit, but she was a role player. And she kind of came in and she made that, you know, she did her job. And it was kind of funny because I remember one of the first times we met, because you had become friends with some of my former players. You had seen the thing I had given to them, so that was one of those interesting, like, oh, okay, yeah, like, hey, I know you. But I remember that was just kind of funny. But yet at the same time, you know, what a great honor again. Into, you know, like I said, that picture is out there. But you as a catcher, you did everything you absolutely possibly could. And then that kid did everything she possibly could, and we're talking what was probably like half an inch, right, between the difference of her being safe and out. And unfortunately for you guys, she was safe. But I do remember that was rather interesting, because at the time I didn't know you, but later on knowing that was like, wow, that's kind of cool, that was you. So
yeah, I remember that's that one piece. Of those pictures that kind of haunts you. You know, you always know what it could have, should have, especially, you know, playing on that stage. It's always one of those, you know, what could you have done a little bit differently to make the outcome come a little bit different or be in your favor? So, yeah.
Right, and I apologize for bringing that up. I just thought the irony of the whole, how things can be such a small world, and in a connection. And to be quite honest with you, that was one of those things where, like, you know, you probably replay in your mind, I could have done this, could have done that, but you're talking about probably one of those moments where everything was just, you know, half an inch, you know, and it was just a great play, I think, on both your parts. So, but I just thought that was so ironic that I had used that picture in an example, and then we met later on, and it was like, oops.
It is.
But,
such a small world, for sure.
It is. It is a very small world. And you were also fortunate enough to also play in the National Pro Fast Pitch League, which, again, attests to the hard work that you put in and, you know, all that drive you have. So tell us how it was different, how that was a different experience than playing in college.
I mean, it's like a 180, to be honest. In college, you go from your life being so structured and being told, you know, what you're going to do from, like I said, 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. You know, you're going to go lift and you're going to run, and then you're going to go to class and you're going to practice, and then you're going to go to study hall. So there's so much structure in your life during college. In the pro league, you know, it's really on you. You know, you practice, you know, every day, but you don't have somebody there telling you, you know, what you're going to do and what your adjustment needs to be or how you're going to swing or, you know, anything like that. So for me, it was a great experience because you're playing against some of the best softball players in the world, you know, like girls that I always looked up to. You think of like epitomized softball, you know, like Jessica Mendoza and Natasha Watley, like, and you look at players like that, and it really like makes you like appreciate the game. And you watch, you know, you watch Jessica Mendoza strike out, and you realize, you know, everybody's human. You know, we're all going to go through it. We play a game of failure, and you know, when you could put things into perspective and realize that, you know, it makes you learn, you know, what your adjustments need to be successful and what you have to do to be successful. And it's not on anybody else's shoulders when you're a pro, except for on your own. And it was a very big learning curve for me to learn myself as a player, both offensively and defensively, on, you know, what I need to do and what I need to fix and what I need to do to be consistent and, you know, be the kind of player that I wanted to be. So, you know, going from a world of structure to non-structure where it was all on me, you know, it's just different. But it was great. You know, it was great. And I think it really allowed me, you know, to learn, you know, and learn the game. And I had to, you know, you either sink or swim, you're either going to learn it and you're going to figure it out, or you're not going to. Because you don't have anybody there holding your hand to help you along the way. You know, you do it yourself. So I learned so much about myself, about my game, about softball in general. And, you know, I got to play at a very, very high level. I mean, being able to play against some of those athletes, it was an honor. It really was to just be on a field with, you know, I always said, like, I always wanted to play against Natasha Watley and see how close it would be if I ever threw against her, you know, just to see, you know, she's so fast. Like, it would just be a great opportunity, you know, and I had the chance to do that. So, you know, those 5 years, like, helped me to be who I am today and, you know, hopefully helped me in my coaching career along the way. So it was awesome.
You know, it's very interesting, too, because, you know, as you tell about your experience, you know, you come from, you relay it in such a humble space, you know, place. And I think what's interesting, too, is that, you know, for you, you just went through your levels of play. And your level of play happened to take you, you know, and your work ethic and your skills to take you to the Division I and then take you to the pros. And I think sometimes when people are on the outside looking in, they forget the fact that, you know, you're doing what actually everyone else is doing. You're just sort of doing it at that little bit higher level, but yet you're going through a lot of the same, you have a lot of the same thoughts, you know, you have the same thoughts, the feelings, concerns. It's about challenging yourself. And I think sometimes people lose perspective of that when, you know, you're on the outside looking in and thinking, oh, well, you know, we do that nowadays with pro athletes. We forget the fact that, you know, you're people too, and you're going through just all these same experiences. You just, you know, your skill sets just take you to that other level. But like you said, it's about challenging yourself and everything, and like, what a great experience for you.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, being a pro, like, athlete, I guess you could say, is, it's such a roller coaster, you know, and people don't realize, you know, that we really are human. You know, there's nothing different about me than there is any other softball player. You know, I go through my ups and downs. You know, there was one season that I hit, you know, like 125, you know, and in my entire season was hitting 125, and, you know, for me it was, what am I going to do to be better? You know, what do I need to do to fix this? Obviously, something went wrong. Something in my swing went wrong to make me hit the way that I just hit. And you could either look at it and, you know, be discouraged, or, you know, figure it out. And for me it was, you know, something went wrong, what do I need to fix? And then I went and fixed it. You know, I went and hit with a hitting coach, and, you know, it helped me, you know, work on things that I never thought about. So, you know, at the end of the day, we're all softball players, you know. Yeah, maybe I had the opportunity to play at a high level, but, you know, we all go through our ups and downs, and we play this game of failure, and you could either let it defeat you, or, you know, you could figure it out. And, you know, I think that's the difference between, you know, playing at that high level and not. Some people just sit there and, you know, you get defeated, and it's so hard to bounce back after that, you know, or, you know, you get yourself up and you figure it out.
Exactly. It's that piece of you're no different than I am, and that kind of thing. And I think that's where sometimes people lose that and forget that fact that you're just doing it at a different level than someone else. But it's no different in any other career or any other endeavor that somebody might take on. It's you know, you're going to go through your struggles and have your strengths and weaknesses as well. So and it's how you work through them and push through them.
And
that shows up everywhere, you know, in our lives. And you know, being a catcher is not an easy position. And, you know, now kind of, you know, hearing a little bit, as you said in the beginning, that you always wanted to be a shortstop and things, you sort of evolved into being a catcher. It wasn't necessarily that you decidedly got behind the plate. But catching has a lot of grunt work with a little fanfare. You know, there's my high school coach used to always call it, you know, putting on the tools of ignorance. But you've had the opportunity to catch for some of the world's best pitchers. So what is that like? And is there more pressure for you to make sure that they succeed, because they always have such high expectations on their shoulders? What's that like from that catcher's perspective?
It's awesome. I mean, it's Everybody always asks me the question, like, you think that catching somebody like Monica, who throws as hard as she throws, you know, would be very challenging. And, you know, I was talking to her last night, actually, and when we were down playing together in Chicago at one point, she, like, broke her record for, she hit 77, which is just crazy speed for a softball pitcher. And to be honest, she made my life so easy because she was so good. And she was so good at hitting her spots, and I always knew where the ball was going. So it really was just reacting, you know, and understanding her as a pitcher. So people look like it should be very difficult, and for me, I thought it was very easy. I mean, she was one of the easiest pitchers to catch because she was so good. And now when she had her off days and maybe she missed spots, like, that became very challenging. But, you know, she was so good, and she is such a perfectionist, and she is such a hard worker, and she has, you know, the work ethic that I've never seen out of somebody. And, you know, to be at a caliber that she's at is just amazing. And it makes me want to push myself even harder to know that she's so good, yet every day she gets out there and works harder and harder and tries to do something different and tries to get a little bit better. And if she's as great as she is, you know, how do you not look at that and want to be, you know, great yourself? So I wouldn't change that for anything. You know, it was on top of being able to catch, like, such a great pitcher, you know, I've also met one of my best friends. And, you know, being able to play with your best friend, I mean, we've played together for 8 years now, 9 years. It's just special. And I think that she holds herself to such a high standard, it pushes me to, you know, hold her to the same standard. And we kind of worked well together because we're both very hard-headed in a sense, you know, where we both have strong opinions, and I have no problem telling her, you know, I expect a lot more from you. You know, you're throwing too much middle of the plate, you know, and she'll give it right back to me, you know. I expect you to frame that ball a lot better. And so I think, you know, we push each other. And, you know, there's a lot of times where we would sit there and argue and fight and, you know, we'd go after each other. But there's such mutual respect for each other that I always knew she was, you know, holding me to a high standard. And I was doing the same for her. So, you know, I think it was a special pitcher-catcher relationship. And, you know, it was not everybody has the opportunity that I had. So, you know, I cherish it. I really do.
You know, it's interesting because as you've been talking, one thing I just want to, you know, point out to, especially for any of our, maybe our younger listeners, kids who are still, you know, still making their way up, one thing that you've brought out and talked about a lot, and I just want to, like I said, just sort of point this out, is it's all about hard work. You got to where you've got to by a lot of hard work. You know, you mentioned Monica Abbott and the fact that she throws as well as she does, and she's, you know, one of the world's best pitchers, and yet every day she gets up and she goes work, you know, works just as hard as she did yesterday, if not harder. And just reinforcing that, you know, it is a constant, continual question of what do I need to do today to get a little bit better? Because I know, you know, in doing some of the lessons and things out there, some of the experiences I've come up across lately is there's that sense of, you know, they kind of, I think, forget that it takes what do I have to do today to be better than I was yesterday? And I think, you know, that trying to just continue to reinforce that people such as, you know, yourselves who have played at the you know, top of the, you know, the best of the best, you're basic thing you've been saying a lot through a lot of this is it's about hard work and looking at what you're not doing correctly and how can I correct that. So I just wanted to sort of like reemphasize that because I think that is an attest to why you've gotten to where you are and what you've been able to do with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at it, like, I think a lot of people, you know, they look at certain things and people get very comfortable, you know, especially when you're good. You get very comfortable with where you're at. And I think in softball and in a lot of different sports, you can always get better. There's always something you can do a little bit better. And I think for me, it was always challenging myself to, you know, be a little bit better in something that day. You know, whatever it was, whether it was my footwork, whether it was my arm, whether it was my, you know, something I was doing hitting, it was just, you know, don't get comfortable with where you are because no matter who you are, you can always be getting better. I mean, Monica's a perfect example of that, you know. She is getting better every single – she comes up with some of the most bizarre pitches I've ever heard. And, you know, I just go with it. But, like, for her, it just makes sense because she's so good at so many other things. Like, why not try and throw away rising screwball or, you know, just something out of the norm? But for her, it's just challenging herself to be somebody she wasn't yesterday, being a little bit better. So I think in softball, it kind of, you know, pushes you to, you know, never get comfortable.
Right, exactly. And I think that's, you know, there again, is when people are really good at something, a lot of times the reason is because they work at it. And it's you know, you might end up, you know, someone might end up with, you know, a little bit better singing voice, or they might end up with a little bit more speed, or, you know, their brain works a little bit faster. But what gets them to the top of the mountain is that work ethic and that drive, like you're talking about, every day to push yourself and not just, like you said, not get comfortable. So I think that's, you know, really important. Absolutely.
Right.
Now, we could probably spend, you know, the whole time talking about your playing career and, you know, all the different experiences, but I also want to get into your coaching career as well, because that's something, you know, that's what you're doing now, and you've, you know, done some, you know, you've been doing some things as an assistant coach, you've worked your way up, and now you do have that head coaching position. But why did you decide, or when did you decide, like, to get into coaching?
That's a funny story. When I got out of college, I thought I wanted to, you know, get into the FBI. I thought I wanted to do something in the criminal justice field, and I was going to only play professionally for one summer. I was going to do it, you know, get it out of my system and then be done with it. And so I played one summer and then decided the next year that I was going to go to Italy and play softball over there, kind of just for the experience. And then, so I went over to Italy and played for a little bit, and then I came back, and then Monica called me and said, you know, I really want you to come catch for me again. Can you please come catch me? You know, how can I send that opportunity? So I went and played again. And after my second season in the league and then one season over in Italy, you know, I kind of just realized, like, there's a reason I keep coming back to this sport. And for me it was, you know, I love softball. I really do. And, you know, it keeps pulling me back as much as I keep saying I'm going to get away, and I'm only going to play one more season. I kept going back to softball. And it kind of just made me realize, you know, this is my passion and this is what I love to do, and there's a reason I keep going back. And so, you know, once I realized that, you know, everybody always says, you know, find something you do that you truly love. And if I love softball as much as, you know, it keeps pulling me back, you know, why not make a career out of it? And so at that point, you know, I started sending out, you know, my resume, trying to get a job. And it's funny because I played, you know, professionally. I played at the University of Tennessee. And when I tried getting my first coaching job, you know, I got shut down a couple times. Not once, not twice, but three times. you know, people is just not willing to take a chance on me because, you know, everybody wants experience, which I understand as a head coach now, I do. Then I didn't understand it, but, and so I really had to work my way from the bottom up. You know, I went and got a graduate assistant position, making pretty much nothing, and, you know, but the way I looked at it was I can, you know, 2 years of my life, get my master's, not make a lot of money, but I'm going to need it in the long run. You know, and I'm going to, at the end of 2 years, I'm going to have my master's, and I'll have 2 years experience. So I'll know I'll be able to get a job after this. Plus, it's going to put me ahead of, you know, a lot of other people with getting my master's. So, you know, I really did start from the bottom to the top. And, you know, now I'm in a great place where, you know, I truly am happy where I am. But it was kind of a revolving thing. I didn't think I wanted to coach, but I think it kind of, you know, you find out what you love to do, and, you know, for me, I just went with it.
No, that's really interesting, and, you know, it's funny because as you've been talking, what I hear so much of what the experiences you've had is you just seem to have a great sense of awareness for getting sort of the big picture and understanding, and even though, like you said, you thought it might be a little bit easier to get a job, realizing that, oh, nope, I got to go put in my dues, and you know, probably put, you know, pushed up the sleeves and said, okay, what do I got to do, and you went and did it, which is, as you've been describing to us, you know, sounds like a lot of what you've done, which goes back to that work ethic that you know, you seem to have.
Yeah,
you know, and And when a player goes from being a player, you know, you're used to doing everything, you know, because as a player you do. And then you go to teaching as a coach. And then you quickly find out that sometimes it's easier to do than teach. So what challenges did you first face when you started coaching over playing?
It's very challenging. And I think that was one of the hardest things for me as a player was, you know, I'd teach something or I talked to one of my kids about something and they just wouldn't get it, you know. And it was challenging for me because I didn't understand why they weren't getting it when I could understand it. And I would, a lot of times I would, you know, turn it back onto myself, you know, and say, well, when I was a player, you know, this drill really helped me or, you know, this made me understand it. But even that, you know, like softball, there's 50 different ways to say one thing. And it was something I had to learn was there's not one way to do anything in softball, especially in coaching. And I needed to learn to expand my vocabulary on the way I was describing certain drills or adjustments and really find, you know, what each player needed, you know, and it wasn't one thing. And that was hard because I only knew one thing, and that was what I needed personally. And it didn't work. It was very unsuccessful. So, you know, I think one of the luxuries that I had as a coach was I was able to still play. And so that allowed me to try what I was saying, you know, and do what I was saying and what I was preaching. And it was funny because there was a lot of times I'm like, no wonder these kids don't understand this. I can't even do this. So it was great for me to be able to play and coach at the same time because, you know, it allowed me to, you know, expand a lot of the things and try different things and, you know, see what worked and what didn't work. And, you know, I think that was a key in helping me learn the coaching piece of it and helping me learn to, you know, really explain things in different ways that, you know, different kids can understand it. Because I believe, you know, hopefully with, you know, a couple coaches, you know, saying it a couple different ways, if you're all saying the same thing, kids are going to pick up on certain things and other kids aren't going to pick up on it. And as coaches, it's our job to figure out what each kid is going to pick up on. So I think that, you know, it was very, very challenging.
No, and absolutely. I think that's sometimes the first thing that a player learns when they start to, you know, cross that line and become a coach is sometimes trying to figure out how to explain it or teach it versus do it. Like you said, there can be 50 different ways to, you know, to try to explain something. And that's that challenge. And I'm sure that that's part of what you've learned now and realized was so valuable for you in helping you now be the coach that you're, you know, you are and are becoming because, you know, you're, I feel, you know, in coaching, you're always evolving just as you are as a player. So I'm sure that was huge impact for you.
Almost.
Now, when you first started coaching, you started at a small Division I school. What adjustments did you have to make coming from like a bigger, you know, a bigger D1 program to a smaller, you know, less funded, less equipped, you know, not having quite sort of the resources? You know, what adjustments did you have to make, and what did you learn about yourself and having to make those adjustments?
I think that honestly, like I didn't know that different programs were functioned differently than what Tennessee functioned. You know, I just thought everybody kind of did the same stuff. And I think it was, for me, it was great to see, you know, how a university functions different than Tennessee, especially one that was, you know, didn't have as many scholarships. The operating budget was very challenging. There was a lot of fundraising, you know, and I think eventually for me, you know, I want to be an athletic director. And so it was good for me to see, you know, steps along the way of, you know, how different universities function. And, you know, it was hard. It was very hard, you know, because I had never fundraised before. And I didn't understand why we needed to fundraise. But, you know, once the head coach at FDU was very helpful in a lot of ways, you know, kind of breaking things down for me and just showing me, you know, this is, you know, our budget. This is what we have to work with. This is, and then from there, you know, kind of who I am as a person was, all right, let's get it done. You know, let's just figure it out. Let's, you know, figure out ways we got to get some of this money to get these girls, you know, what they deserve as athletes. So I think it was just kind of a shock at first, you know, because I think I was very uneducated on how a lot of different programs function. And, you know, it was a big adjustment for sure.
Yeah, and I'm sure, like you said, it's helped shape you and with your future goals of being an athletic director. Like you said, you'll take that with you, and that'll be very valuable. In recruiting, we know recruiting now is the lifeline of coaching. You know, you turn on any sports talk radio show, and all they talk about is, you know, the recruiting of players of the next, you know, football a lot and basketball you hear, but recruiting is a lifeline of coaching. So what did you learn, you know, what have you learned about today's athlete that maybe feels a little different from when you were being recruited, or, you know, the process that was taking place, you know, when you were going through it?
Oh, I mean, I think the process is changed completely. I mean, like I said earlier, I didn't go on my official visit until my senior year. You know, I didn't make a decision until my senior year. So, I think that today the recruiting process is just super early. And I think one of the biggest things is, like, getting kids to educate themselves on how the recruiting process is and educate themselves on, you know, different universities and what they want and what's important to them. And, you know, I think kids don't do their homework enough to a certain degree, you know, and I think there's a place for everybody. I really do. And, you know, when kids understand what they want and what's important to them, because not every kid wants, you know, a Tennessee softball, you know, career. You know, there's a lot of kids, you know, who, for example, the kids that want to come to Amherst, you know, they want a great education and they understand life after college, and, you know, they want the softball piece of it and they want to play great softball. But at the end of the day, they're there to get a great education. And so I think today the biggest thing is getting kids to understand how the recruiting process is. And, you know, if you want Tennessee and that's, you know, where you want to go and you're a senior and you still haven't heard from Tennessee, I think being realistic with yourself and understanding, you know, the recruiting process is far past that. And the chances of you going to Tennessee as a senior are probably, you know, very, very slim. But, you know, as a eighth grader, which is crazy to say, as a ninth grader, you know, you got to start doing your homework a little bit and, you know, start sending out your emails to the schools you want to go to. Start letting people know that you're interested in their schools and where you're going to be and, you know, where you're playing. And, you know, I think a lot of it has to do with, it's a lot on the kids right now because it's so far ahead. And, you know, when you understand that, you aren't going to get to your senior year and say, you know, well, I didn't know the recruiting process. They're already on their freshman. They understand that, you know, I needed to do my homework 4 years ago. So I think that the recruiting process is just so far along right now that kids just need to be educated on how it is and, you know, make a list of what's important to them and figure out, you know, for instance, Amherst and Tennessee are on two totally different spectrums. You know, your academic schools are going to be a little bit later in the recruiting process, and that's because we need grades. You know, we need test scores. Schools, your bigger schools, your big softball schools, they don't need that. And so they're going to be, you know, in their freshmen and their sophomores. So, you know, I think being educated on the recruiting process is huge and understanding what you want and, you know, putting yourself out there. Do your homework.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's college sports in general have just become big business. And that's at all, you know, all the different levels, you know, D1, 2, and 3. It really doesn't matter what level anymore. It's college athletics in general has just really become a big business, and recruiting is a big part of it. And, you know, that was a good, you know, good insight that you just shared with us. You know, it amazes me how quickly time always flies, but, you know, and if you've got a few extra minutes, we could keep going here, because I definitely want to now get into talking to you about Amherst. Because you know, now you're the head coach at Amherst, which is a highly reputable Division III school, and it's, you know, well known nationally for its academics. But going from Division I to Division III is a big change in a lot of ways. I mean, too many ways for us to really get into here in general. But what have been some of the biggest differences you've had to adjust to going from Division I to a Division III school?
I think the biggest difference, especially just at, like, in Amherst, it's just academics. You know, there's so much pressure on these kids academically that, you know, I didn't get that at Tennessee. I think that, you know, my stress was different. You know, I experienced a lot of stress athletically. You know, and the kids at D3, they just have so much pressure on them academically that it's a challenge. You know, it's a challenge to balance, you know, getting these kids to perform at the level that we want them to perform at, but also, you know, give them a little bit of leeway to understand the stress that they're going through in their lives with, you know, their schoolwork. It's kind of been a balancing act, and, you know, it's different for me because in the NESCAC, we're not allowed to practice in the fall, so that's a huge adjustment, and I get it. I mean, they're students, and it's a great time, you know, for them to, you know, focus on their schoolwork, so that's been a huge adjustment, and it's even going to be a huger adjustment when we do start practicing in February, and I figure out how to get these kids ready in a month. But I think one of the biggest adjustments for me has been the preconceived notion of what a Division III athlete is, I think is very, very wrong. You know, and I think I was guilty of it myself, of, you know, thinking I knew what it was to be a Division III athlete, and it's just not that. You know, I've watched some of, you know, my kids, and, you know, I've seen some of my kids, and, you know, I have some really, really athletic kids, and I'm super excited to be able to work with them. You know, I've watched their videos, and I think that it's just a different kid, you know, and so that's where in the recruiting process, I think when kids figure out what they want and what's important to them, you know, this comes into play because it's not that I get less athletic kids. I get kids who, you know, understand life after college and they want an amazing education and, you know, that comes first. But I think a lot of my kids could play D1. You know, I really do. And so I think the preconceived notion of what a D3 athlete is just very false for a lot of people. And, you know, unless you have gone and watched, you know, a D3, unless you come and watch Amherst College softball play, you don't really know what it is. And I was that way, too. I didn't know. And so I think that's been one of the – a great adjustment, you know, is knowing that I have some really great softball players who I'm super excited to work with eventually. And I just think that, you know – people's view on Division III is just skewed a little bit, and I think until you've seen it, you know, it's hard to, you know, have the right impression of what it really is.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we could probably do a whole another hour on breaking down some of the differences and talking about recruiting and talking about understanding, like you said, about finding the right fit. You know, whether it's academics first or things like that, because I think that's where a lot of people miss it. They miss that understanding of they sort of get a little blinded by it's D1 scholarship or bust, and not realizing the tremendous opportunities that are out there at all the levels. You know, and speaking to that, so what are some of your goals for the program at Amherst?
I mean, I think Amherst is an awesome place for me to be. I mean, when I was on my interview, I think one of the things that really stuck out to me was the amount of national championships that are being won at that school in a lot of different sports. I mean, they've won national championships in women's basketball and men's basketball and in tennis. I mean, there's just been a lot of winning going on. And, you know, for me as a competitor, that gets me excited. You know, if everybody else is winning national championships, why can't softball? And that's kind of how I looked at it, is that obviously something's going right for the school for everybody else to be winning national championships. And so as a competitor, you know, I came here knowing that that's what I want. You know, I want to be able to compete for a national championship, and I think Amherst can. You know, I think that we have everything in line to be able to do that. So, you know, for me, that's what I want. I want to compete for a national championship. I want to, you know, represent Amherst the way that I think Amherst needs to be represented, and I think softball can be a big piece of that puzzle just like all the other sports are.
Well, absolutely, and Division III softball in the Northeast is actually very competitive. As we were saying, you know, you could break down all the different levels, and they've won national championships in other programs, and just last year, Tufts University actually won the softball national championship. I know when you and I met, we talked about that. And seven of the top 25 teams nationally are within about 250 miles of Amherst. So this area is very big, you know, has a very competitive nature for softball. So without a doubt, that's not outside of the realm of possibility. And being that Amherst is a nationally known academic school, I think that does allow you sort of an advantage to recruit nationally. But in not having scholarships, what are some of the selling points you feel, you know, will allow you to bring in players from all over that can help you build this, you know, successful program and try to strive towards that national championship?
I mean, I think that Amherst kind of sells itself. You know, it's a special place for a special kid who understands education and wants, you know, at the end of the day, to get an amazing education. And I think that's the biggest thing with Amherst is, you know, you're going to get one of the best educations in the country. And aside from that, I mean, we are going to compete. You know, we are going to compete at a high level. And I get a lot of kids who, you know, are borderline, you know, other great academic schools. And I'm a firm believer as a coach that, you know, I'll play nine freshmen. I have no problem playing nine freshmen, you know. So if you want to come to school and get a great education and play great softball and have a chance to start as a freshman, you know, this is the place for you. And I think that that's what makes Amherst so special is that, you know, you can come in and you can start and you can compete for at a very, very high level. You know, we're going to compete for a national championship. And at the end of the day, you're going to walk out of here in 4 years with one of the best educations in the country. And I think that's very powerful.
And it's also such a beautiful area, and you've got UMass Amherst at Amherst right down the road from you guys, and not far from Northampton, and it's such a, you know, beautiful part of the country too. So it's and it's got a great great college feel. I know that was one of the things when I went up there, is it feels like a college town and a college place. So it's a great great atmosphere as well. Without a doubt.
Right. I mean, we're part of the five colleges, so there's five colleges right in the same area, and I mean, I think that's something that's different about us is that, you know, we can pretty much offer any course that you could want. You know, if we don't have it, you know, one of the five colleges around us will have it, and, you know, you're allowed to take classes at, you know, maybe Smith or, you know, UMass that may have a course that Amherst doesn't offer, but, you know, you'll be able to take it. So it's definitely, you know, a college town because of, you know, the five colleges that are in the area.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point, too, to write so that you pretty much will be able to, you guys, like you said, if you guys don't have it, find the course, and that's a great asset as well.
Right.
Definitely. So just a last couple quick questions here. So what life lessons has athletics taught you, and do you feel that these have helped you experience so much success in both your playing and coaching career? Like, you know, maybe what are some of those life lessons that you carry with you that you've learned?
Oh, man. I mean, I think softball has so many life lessons. And I think one of the biggest ones is mental toughness. You know, I always say, like, what I went through at Tennessee was one of the most challenging and difficult times of my life and, you know, very rewarding at the same time. But the mental toughness that I learned there, I mean, I feel like you could put me anywhere and I'll figure it out. And, you know, that's kind of how I live my life, how I coach, you know, how I play it is, you know, I don't want excuses, just figure it out. We're just going to figure out how to get it done. And, you know, I think softball has taught me that. And, you know, there's so many ways that, you know, and so many easy ways to make excuses. But at the end of the day, you know, they're not going to get you anywhere. You know, so the mental toughness that I've learned, you know, through softball and through playing at such a high level and the pressures that are put on you, you know, has made me, you know, who I am. It's very black and white. Just get it done. And I think that that's one of the biggest things, you know, that I learned.
Yeah, and I think with everything you've shared with us today, that definitely has come through, and a lot of your message that, you know, that you get it. You know, you get that big picture, and that definitely comes from having that mental toughness. Now, if you could tell a 12-year-old a couple of things or you know, just tell a 12-year-old something. They're, you know, they're getting started, or maybe now we should shift it down to a 10-year-old, right? But you could tell a 10 or a 12-year-old something that could help them become their best. What might that be?
I think at the end of the day, I think you have to remember why you play this game. And, you know, I think softball is one of those games that right now with the way things are going, with the amount of lessons and the amount of clinics and the amount of camps and the pressure that's put on some of these kids is – it's hard to, you know, remember why we play the game. And if you can remember to that you play for the love of the game, you know, it's going to make it so much easier to play that game. And it's not going to be such a chore. And it's not going to be such a, I got to go to camp and I got to go to lessons. And don't get me wrong, I think with the way things are today, like, it's kind of just part of what you have to do, you know, to stay up with it. But a lot of kids get burned out, and it's just so much at such a young age. And I think at the end of the day, if you can remember to love the game and, you know, play for the love of the game, you know, it makes it a lot easier to go out there on days that, you know, might be a little bit harder to get out of bed, or, you know, you're missing a team party or you're missing a friend's birthday party. But there's a reason you started playing this game in the first place. And if you can remember that, I think it'll make it a lot easier.
Well, that's some great advice, and obviously coming from you, it's something you've done, so it's authentic advice, and you know, something you've done personally done yourself. So, you know, thank you for sharing that. And I want to, you know, thank you for joining us here today. You know, I'm looking forward to. I'm actually going to be working with Shannon and the Amherst team come this spring and doing some of that mental training and working on that mental toughness. So I'm really, really looking forward to that. And Shannon, I'd like to, you know, thank you for joining us today. And if you'd like to maybe, you know, give us any last little words or anything, please, you know, share those with us.
I just think that, especially for all the kids out there, is just, you know, remember to love the game and work hard, you know. And if at the end of the day you can look yourself in the mirror and be happy with what you did that day, you know, you're going to get to your dreams. And there's so many people who, you know, are going to tell you can't or you're not good enough. But, you know, if you want something, you know, it's on you. Go get it.
Well, great words of advice and great talking with you. I mean, we went a little bit longer than I had said we'd go today. So I appreciate you taking that time. It was a great conversation, and I definitely would have could have talked to you a little bit longer. But,
definitely.
You know, thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, it was great. And you know, have a great Christmas. And I believe you said you're heading down to Tennessee, so enjoy your Tennessee Christmas down there.
Thank you so much.
All right, well, take care, and I'll let Shannon go now, and I'll just finish up the stuff I have to do. And again, Shannon, thank you very much for joining us here.
No problem. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Take care. I just want to let everyone know now on just some of the upcoming shows we have. Coming up on Life Coach Radio Network on Monday, December 23rd at 8 p.m. is Spiritually Speaking with Reverend Jen. On Thursday, December 26th at noon, so the day after Christmas, you can do some listening with Andrea Ruckelman, and her show is Gaining Perspective with Andrea Ruckelman. And then on Monday, December 30th at noon, we have 30 Awesome, Create Your Best Year Yet with the 30-something Coach. And on the Life Coach Chat channel, the next show we have coming up on there is this Sunday, December 22nd at noon, which is the Super Soul Sunday After Show Special Edition. Watch Oprah's Super Soul Sunday show at 11 a.m. and then join the Life Coach Chat group as they discuss the show that you guys just watched. So watch Oprah at 11 and then join them at noon on the Life Coach Chat channel as they have an after show discussion. And that will be Sunday, December 22nd at noon. And then coming up on the International Life Coach Radio Network on Sunday, December 22nd at 1 p.m. is the Zenberry Life, Tips to Maintain Vitality Through the Holidays. So you can listen to Super Soul Sunday at noon on the Life Coach Chat channel and then hop on over to the International Life Coach Radio at 1 p.m. So, again, thank you, everyone, for listening. Sorry we went a little bit long there, but that conversation with Shannon, I was just enjoying it so much and just loved talking with her and all the information she was sharing. I will next be on Friday, January 3rd at noon, and my topic is going to be, if not now, then when, making 2014 your year. So I'm going to be looking forward to that. And I want to thank you all for listening. Now go out there and have a great weekend. A Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and remember to ignite your inner greatness so you can live and play fearless, focused, and free. See you next year, January 3rd, 2014, at noon. Take care, everyone.